Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Welcome. It is so great to have you with us today. And if you were one of those wonderful, generous folks who joined us for our fall share event a week ago, thank you so much for making a gift to Faith Radio. You know, we just had so many great people that called in. I was talking to many of my colleagues, and they are so enthusiastic about the overwhelming outpouring of support for Faith Radio and our programming all throughout the Upper Midwest. And if you're one of those people who did not have an opportunity to give during the fall share, hey, you can do that today. You can do it online at myfaithradio.com. We would encourage you, if you've been a Faith Radio listener for any length of time and this programming that you hear on this network means something to you, why not consider giving back? Rather than just, you know, simply being a listener, rather than simply being a user, a consumer of Faith Radio's programming, why not be one of those people who invest in this ministry and keeps it going and helps us to spread the good news of Jesus Christ throughout your area, throughout your city, and throughout your state? Because that's what we're all about here at Faith Radio. So think about that this week. Pray about that if you would. And you can learn more about giving to Faith Radio, either as an individual or as a business person, by going to myfaithradio.com. Well, I don't know about you, but I have a very heavy heart this morning. I have been watching the coverage of the community college massacre in Oregon, and it grieves me to the core. And I don't mind using the word massacre, because that's exactly what it was. And I think what is particularly heinous about this crime is that, as you may have heard, the shooter specifically targeted Christians in his rampage. And maybe you haven't been paying close attention to the story. Maybe you just kind of heard it in passing. But the murderer, that's what he was, the murderer, the mass murderer, reportedly approached students, pointed his gun at them, and then asked them, "What is your religion?" If they answered Christian, he shot them in the head. If they said they were another religion or they didn't answer him, he shot them in the legs. Now, obviously, this young man was severely disturbed, but I think all of us today are asking why. Why did something like this happen? Now, President Obama and the gun control people are jumping all over. Oh, it's because weapons were so easily available to him. But I think, you know, on one hand, the answer to this is really spiritual. Satan obviously used this guy as a tool to carry out his evil purposes here on earth. You know, the Bible says that the devil comes to steal and destroy, and he prowls around the earth like a hungry lion, looking for someone to devour. And he will use whatever means he can to wreak havoc on humanity. And he used this guy. He used this 25-year-old man, this murderer, as part of his evil purposes. But on another level, though, I think we have to acknowledge that the media and even our government may have contributed to this shooter's anger and vitriol toward evangelical Christians. You know, we've been talking about this here on Faith Radio for some time, but the anti-Christian bias of the mainstream media is no secret to anybody. And it simply feeds the anger and bitterness of individuals like this shooter. People who are agnostic or atheist and have a chip on their shoulder about faith or the fact that there could possibly be a God. And, you know, there's just so much right now in both the media and in the government. I mean, you look at the state of Oregon, for example, and some of the rulings that we've seen just in the last few years on a state level and on a local level in Oregon, and the way the media has covered that. So many governmental policies, both federal government and state government and local governments, they've been clearly aimed at evangelical Christians. And this is just one terrible product of that. Maybe you don't believe there's a link, but I believe there's a very clear link. Yeah, the guy is disturbed. Yeah, he had a gun. But what fed his resentment and bitterness and anger towards Christians? I think the media is very complicit, and the government, many government policies are complicit in this. But I think we also need to examine our own hearts, and we need to ask ourselves if we have some major work to do in how we are perceived by those who are hostile to the Christian faith. Sometimes when the media reports on things that churches or Christians do, they're accurate. And are we manifesting the fruit of the Spirit in our lives? Ask yourself that question this week. Do your neighbors and do your work associates see love and joy and peace and kindness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control in your actions? Let's just take the workplace. Are they seeing a different type of worker, a different type of colleague? The Bible says they will know us by our love, both for each other the church, and also for them, for those outside the church. And are we really manifesting the fruit of the Spirit in our behavior? And I was thinking even just about my neighbors this week, and I'll admit, you know, we sometimes the Meyer family, we'll have, you know, we'll be outside with the kids, and there's some screaming and yelling going on because of our children's behavior. Usually it's toward each other. And I thought about this the other day. We were getting ready for church. Yes, we were getting ready for church, and we were running late, and the kids were at each other's throats, and my wife and I were trying to get them into the car, and voices were raised, and I looked across the way, and I saw our non-Christian neighbors getting into their car, heading off, I think, to the golf course, and I thought to myself, wow. What type of example did we just set? It wasn't a good one. And they probably see us on a regular basis on Sunday morning, all dressed up in our finest, getting ready to go off to church. So I do think there obviously there's just multiple levels to this whole Oregon shooting thing. And I won't even, as a psychologist, I won't even get into the mental illness part of it. But man, we have a lot of people out there. Okay, I will get into it. We have a lot of people out there who are hurting in our society. The loneliness, we have so many individuals who don't have one close friend. It's a huge percentage. We talked about this a couple weeks ago here on Faith Radio. A huge percentage of Americans don't have one close friend, not one person they can turn to in time of need. What is our responsibility to those people in our sphere of influence who are lonely and hurting, and even who are weird? Yeah, who are hard to talk to and deal with. You know, Jesus met with people like that. I'm sure. Think about that demoniac, man, the guy that came out of the caves. And there's many other examples, I think, in Scripture where we can kind of read between the lines and say, you know what, this person probably was not so easy to do. Zacchaeus, the guy up on the tree, boy, his neighbor sure hated him, that, you know, despicable tax collector and greedy guy. And Jesus welcomes him down to, says, I'm going to come to your house and have dinner with you. So I don't know. I think we need to start really, again, examining our own hearts and not give the media anything more to feed on But instead, are we the sort of people that God would be proud of in all of our actions? So anyway, those are some of my thoughts, and I'll talk probably more about this next week. But I don't want to just leave you with the depressing story of the Oregon shooter. I want to tell you about some good news that I heard this week. Saw this story on Fox News and just had to share it with you. It's about an elderly disabled man who went to buy a meal at a McDonald's restaurant in Chicago, and a kind-hearted employee who helped him. It happened in downtown Chicago at a McDonald's on a busy street during the dinner rush. And another customer took a photo of this employee's act of kindness and posted it on Facebook. The woman, the customer with the camera, I guess she used her cell phone, Destiny Carrero, it shows the McDonald's employee helping to cut the food of an elderly customer in a wheelchair. And this image has been shared, I think, like 500,000 times on Facebook and other social media platforms. Destiny says she was standing in line waiting to order when this old man in a wheelchair rolls up and buys his food and then asks the cashier, "Please help me." And she said, "To be honest, I thought the cashier wasn't going to help, especially during rush hour in downtown Chicago. But to my shock, he shut down the register and disappeared from view." The guy who owns the McDonald's franchise, Rob Lubesnik, said the company is very proud of this employee, who they identified only as Kenny. He said the restaurant chain is overwhelmed by the positive response that Kenny has received for his compassion and kindness. Rod says it's a true testament to who Kenny is and a reminder to all of us that one seemingly small act of kindness can touch the hearts of so many. Wow. I don't know if Kenny is a believer, but I have a suspicion that he may be. And that's the sort of thing that we want to characterize us as believers. You know, when we're busy and maybe we don't have time to, and maybe it's a risk. I mean, approaching somebody like, or, you know, helping somebody like this in that sort of situation. But I think Kenny is a great example. He certainly is to me. Well, it's 11:16 now, and coming up, we're going to be moving into an issue that I think is so important to all of us as believers, and that is, what does the Bible say about economics and business and unemployment and taxations? Maybe you've never thought about those things, but Faith Radio's own Austin Hill will be joining me here in just a bit, as we dive into a Christian perspective, a biblical perspective on economics here on Faith Radio. Stick with us.
The conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
So great to have you with us today here on the Faith Radio Network. You can learn more about what we do, who we are, the programming we offer Monday through Friday by going to myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. Boy, you can also growing your faith there. Talk about some fantastic articles on discipleship and apologetics, how to more effectively share your faith. It's all right there in one place, myfaithradio.com. Well, joining me this morning is my friend and colleague Austin Hill, who you hear every weekday morning here on Faith Radio. In addition to hosting Austin Hill in the morning, Austin is an author, he's a consultant, he's the host of Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business, which is a syndicated talk show about small business ownership and entrepreneurship. You can hear that program this afternoon at 1 p.m. here on Faith Radio. Austin holds a master's degree in philosophy of religion and ethics from Biola University in Southern California. He is co-author of the books The Virtues of Capitalism, A Moral Case for Free Markets, and White House Confidential, The Little Book of Weird Presidential History. And Austin, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Dr. Bill, good morning. Great to be with you. Thanks for the invite.
No, you bet. Now, you recently spoke just 2 weeks ago at a major Christian worldview conference in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know a little bit about that conference and what you talked about there to those people who were gathered to learn more about apologetics and Christian worldview.
Right. Yeah. Well, thanks for asking. It was the Truth for a New Generation Apologetics Conference. This is an annual event that was founded by a mutual friend of yours and mine, Dr. Alex McFarland, who I think both of us would agree is a really, really smart individual and really knows his stuff in terms of applying scriptural truth, timeless wisdom from the scriptures to modern day philosophical challenges and even modern day problems and dilemmas that we face in our 21st century world. So a lot of fine speakers there, Dr. Alex McFarland being one of them. I approached this issue. I did a couple of presentations at the conference. One of them simply called Business and the Economy, the Moral Issue That We Can No Longer Ignore. And that, by the way, is, I believe it's a subheading in my latest book that you made reference to, The Virtues of Capitalism. It's an economic issue that, as Christians in our country, and I suspect elsewhere around the Western world anyway, as we think in terms of what are the real big moral issues, the big moral challenges of our time, economics doesn't really come up on the radar screen. As a matter of fact, and I cited this in my presentation, Dr. Bill, earlier this summer, and I think you and I both talked about this, but the very esteemed publication World Magazine published research data, polling data that they had compiled. They conducted a survey among evangelical Christian leaders across the country, and many of them, I'm sure, are pastors, probably some of them from the world of Christian academia, maybe some from business as well. But they did a survey asking Christian leaders, what are the real big issues of our time that would impact your choice for the next president, as we are obviously seeing presidential campaigns in full swing right now? What are the issues you're really, really focusing on? Well, religious liberty ranked really, really high, and that's a good thing. So also did the sanctity of life. That's a very good thing as well. However, foreign policy and economic policy almost were a no-show in that survey. And I would respectfully suggest to any Christian leader and any of us who are, you know, the people in the pews, the laity, I would respectfully suggest that we cannot have religious liberty in our country while ignoring foreign policy, nor can we sustain religious liberty while ignoring economic policy. And I would also suggest that this doesn't necessarily impact life in the womb so much, although as we see some very ugly things unfold about the Planned Parenthood organization in our country, clearly there's all kinds of economic issues surrounding that. But we really can't uphold the sanctity of life or religious liberty without wrapping our minds around this concept of economics. So that's, quite frankly, that's kind of how I started my presentations, both of them.
Why do you think, Austin, so many evangelicals are either clueless about the connection between economics and Christian faith, or actually just say, you know, that's a worldly issue. That has nothing to do with my life of faith and my Christian walk. Historically, that's not the way it used to be. If you look at the reformers, if you look at the early years of this country with what the Puritans believed, what has happened to cause the modern day evangelical, including many pastors, many leaders, as you said, mm-hmm. to simply say, this is not part of our deal. This is nothing we really need to be worried about.
Well, that's a great question, and I want to be respectful with my answer, but the fact is that we live in an era, in my estimation anyway, and I'm not the only person who's saying this, but we live in an era in the history of our world and in the history of the United States of America where, you know, we've got probably a majority of us in our country right now are, I want to say, illiterate about the history of our own country. We are illiterate about the history of Western civilization. We have taken it for granted for so long that, and this is one of the biblical foundations of economic thinking, we've taken it for granted for so long that one has the right to private property. Now, when you and I, in our modern context, when we hear the word property, we think real estate. We think the house that I live in, or maybe an office complex that I own and lease or what have you. But in economic terms, and in historic philosophical terms, property is any material resource, really, that you can own and that you can use to make money, whether it's land that you grow vegetables on, or it's software that you use to create opportunities. We are accustomed to the term intellectual property, but that's yet another subcategory in the broader issue of property. We've taken it so for granted for so many generations in our country that, yeah, sure, my property is my property, and Dr. Bill, your property is your property. And we haven't had to study it and understand what the founders of our country realized when our country was being formulated. And this gets us into all kinds of historical and philosophical concerns that we can continue to dive into, but we just haven't had to worry about it. But we live in an age where it is common thinking. This moral relativism has slept into our snuck into our culture in such a way that it is common thinking that, yeah, Dr. Bill's money is his money, but you know, if he makes too much of it, well, that's unfair. I deserve some of that, and we need to raise taxes on Dr. Bill and give his money to somebody who is more deserving. That's the common ethos of our culture right now, and Christians haven't had to understand anything different, and all too often, I believe, our brothers and sisters in Christ, in America anyway, are buying into it, and it's really, really dangerous.
Well, you know, you just look at the current polling data. Let's just talk about, and I don't want to get overly political here, but let's talk about the Democratic Party. And you look at Bernie Sanders' rise in the polls. Bernie Sanders from Vermont is openly a socialist. He wouldn't even call himself a Democrat. He's a socialist. Mm-hmm. And Bernie Sanders has a very different view about private property than the Bible does. And if Bernie Sanders were to be elected president of this country, we would be looking at some policies that, frankly, could take our private property away. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I will tell you that at the Truth for a New Generation conference, where I was speaking a couple of weekends ago, I had a lot of folks my age and your age and in our age range, Dr. Bill, and a lot of older folks, grandparents as well. And by the way, just to be very clear, the audience at the Truth for a New Generation conference, the apologetics conference, ranged from kids, I want to say, as young as junior high school age to people in their 70s. So it was quite a broad array, but I had a lot of folks in the 50-plus crowd, shall we say, come to me after my speaking presentations, and they were all abuzz about the popularity of Bernie Sanders and saying, oh, my gosh, how do we talk to our kids about this? Our grandson thinks that this guy's ideas are great. And to my point, we are not accustomed to having to defend the right to private property and private ownership. And here's an illustration. Here's an anecdote that I think would be meaningful to you and your listeners, and I'll hold that until after the break. I hear the music playing, but there, I think there's a connection we can make with some very thoughtful Christian psychologists, quite frankly. But I'll save
all right.
That.
We will save that for after the break, because one of the things about Austin, he's got some great anecdotes. I mean, he's Mr. Anecdote. So you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. My guest is Austin Hill, who you hear Monday through Friday between 6 and 8 in the morning on Austin Hill in the Morning. And you'll hear later this afternoon on his Saturday show, Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. We'll chat more with Austin and find out about what the Bible says about economics in just a bit here on the Faith Radio Network. Stick with us.
Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
Welcome back. So great to have you with us today on this Saturday in the Upper Midwest. My guest, Austin Hill, who you hear Monday through Friday on Austin Hill in the Morning, 6 to 8 a.m. on the Faith Radio Network. And of course, later this afternoon with his Saturday show, which is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Stick around for that coming up 1 o'clock. Today, and Austin just spoke at a major Christian worldview conference in South Carolina put together by our mutual friend Alex McFarland, whose brain is bigger than the room. Sometimes when I talk to Alex McFarland, I feel like a mental midget, but I learned so much from the guy. Austin, I know you have as well. So
absolutely.
Before the break, we were talking about some discussion that was had at this conference that you took part in regarding what might happen if somebody like a Bernie Sanders was elected president.
Yeah, and it may seem odd. I think it is odd to a lot of people to try to connect the timeless ancient wisdom of our Christian faith and the scriptures to our modern day global financial system and our economics. But listen, I got to tell you, if we are to take seriously the books of James and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and other passages of scripture, we have to conclude that debt is a really bad thing. It leaves people in bondage. It leaves people in slaves. It destroys opportunity and people's choices going forward into the future. And ultimately, debt has to be repaid. And yet, and you make reference to Senator Bernard Sanders of Vermont, who's running for the presidency. I haven't looked for about a week or so, but it was probably 7 or 8 days ago. I was looking at Mrs. Clinton's campaign website, Hillary Clinton, and which I think is hillaryclinton.com. But I mean, she's trying to keep up with Bernie Sanders, throwing out these socialists, you know, we'll pay for your college education. Everybody deserves a debt-free college education stuff. And right there on her homepage, it said something to the effect of, debt should not hold you back. Well, I got news for you. Debt does hold one back. That is scriptural. That is a reality. And we are a nation in severe denial if we think that somehow the government... See, this gets into a whole another area that I have grave concerns about. I think America and Christians are, in some cases, part and parcel to the problem here. We've sort of made a god of government. We think that if government says, well, health care is now free, or we've just arbitrarily reduced the cost of government, or we've refinanced your mortgage for you, or we bailed you out of your payments that are in arrears on your mortgage. If government is giving us something, it's free and it's magical and nobody gets harmed by it. That is false. That is a false narrative. And we've got a few generations of Americans in our country who don't understand that, and a lot of people in the pews and in the pulpits who don't understand how the scriptures speak to these issues. And if we don't begin to take these seriously, and I think those of us who are laity, we have got to start proactively wrapping our minds around these issues and speaking truth to them and get tutored up ourselves on this issue. If we don't, I really do, I'm not terribly optimistic for the future of our country and for the future of the world. But that just the fact that somebody could be a serious candidate for the presidency right now, which Mrs. Clinton is, and tell us that, you know, your personal debt really shouldn't matter. Just go on and consume without producing. That should send off alarm bells in churches and seminaries and among the evangelical intelligentsia all over the country.
And yet it's not, as you've pointed out with that World Magazine recent survey. It's funny, I was talking to my kids the other night at the dinner table, and we have a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and an 8-year-old at home, and so we're trying to start early in helping our kids understand some of these. And they're big concepts, obviously. They're large concepts for kids to grasp. But one of the things that we often talk about, and I asked them this the other night, I don't remember what the context was, but I said, guys, does the government make money? Mm-hmm. And they said, no, the government doesn't make money. I said, does the government spend money? And they said, yeah, it does. And we talked about some of the ways the government spends money. And I said, where does the government get their money? And my son said, from you, Dad.
Bingo. He gets a prize.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. I was very proud of him. And we talked
Thank
about
Thank you, Joseph Meyer, for a moment of wisdom. He is so correct about that.
Yeah, and we talked about the percentage of Dad's dollar, every dollar that I'm earned. And then we talked about how some other countries in the world where, you know, I said, Joseph, if you own your own business, and for every dollar you made, you'd have to give a half of that or more, or maybe 75% of it.
Right.
He said, 75 cents of every dollar? I said, mm-hmm. But Joseph, think about all the wonderful programs that that government could offer to all the people, and everybody could have everything that they want. And you could see the wheels turning in his head. And so mm-hmm. we're trying. I mean, obviously, this is an uphill battle in this country. But you mentioned before the break an anecdote, something that I don't know if you came up at the conference you were speaking at or just a thought you had that sort of helps us to make the link here.
I think so, yes. And I want to get to that in a moment. But just to follow up, to complete the thought of what we're talking about here, some of which is these ideas from Senator Sanders and former Secretary Hillary Clinton that are becoming wildly popular, this socialism that says I'm entitled to somebody else's stuff. I think a lot of these folks, the young people in particular, who are saying, yeah, I like the idea of a debt-free college tuition or what have you. In fact, I just saw Senator Sanders in a national television interview last weekend, and he was being interviewed, I believe it was on CNN, and he said the concept of an educated populace is a moral issue. Well, it most certainly is, and I don't want to deny that. I don't want to come across as dismissive about these issues. And the fact that college tuition in a lot of colleges and universities only goes one direction. It only goes up. Even when a recession is happening and the prices of other goods and services are declining, college tuition prices usually go up and up and up. That is a very serious problem. And we've got way too many young adults with bachelor's degrees and mountains of student loan debt. They did what they were told. They followed directions. They got good grades. They got the degree and seemingly no career future or job future. That's a very serious problem. I would also, and when I saw Senator Sanders say, well, this is a moral issue, I wanted to yell at the guy and say, Senator, there is nothing moral about getting a generation of Americans addicted to a government that's almost $19 trillion in debt. Mm-hmm. And I think what that really requires us to do, Dr. Bill, is to, as our friend Alex McFarland would say, put on our thinking caps and think more critically about these issues. Yes, there is a serious problem of the college education being too expensive. We need to look at the reasons why it's too expensive instead of just saying, we'll do a quick fix, we'll take money from somebody else so you don't have to pay for it. That's not a solution. That digs us further into trouble. So I want to honor the dilemma and the problem, but my goodness, we have got to be more thoughtful, especially in the church, about the solutions to those problems. I just wanted to add that.
No, I'm glad you did, and we all need to take the time to educate our kids and educate ourselves. And that means, as I've often said on this program, turning off the television and actually picking up a book. Or, yeah, you can even do it on a Kindle. And you can read a book, sure, like Austin's book that he wrote with Dr. Scott Ray, The Virtues of Capitalism. You can learn. You know, you make a very strong case in the book for why Christians should care about things like economics and taxation and unemployment and free markets. So let's just take a moment, because I know we have some people listening who are, their eyes maybe are glazing over, saying, well, it has nothing to do with my Christian walk. Okay, so caring about economic issues and people's economic well-being is important. But why should the topics of business and economics be important to believers? Let's just kind of lay out the case that you and Scott Ray make in your book.
Well, for one thing, I think there's a moral and spiritual principle in play here, and it gets to this anecdote that I'd made reference to a little bit earlier in your program, Dr. Bill. You and I, many years ago, back in the 90s, did some work with a couple of gentlemen, a very well-known Christian psychologist, Dr. John Townsend and Dr. Henry Cloud, and they co-authored a very, I'll call it a famous book series called the Boundaries Book Series. And the idea, the concept that is so pretty readily understood, I would like to think, in the church today, the idea that my life has boundaries, my feelings, my preferences, my ambitions, my tastes, my likes, my dislikes, those are mine, and Dr. Bill, you have yours, and your space ends where mine begins, and vice versa, and I need to respect your boundaries, and those kinds of things. We have open discussions about that, especially as they pertain to our relationships in the church today, thanks in no small part to a couple of very theologically and biblically astute guys, Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend. But it's interesting to note that their very first book, and I, as you know, I worked for them when that first Boundaries book was published. In their very first book, they start off chapter one, I think it's page one of that first book that became a very successful series, describing boundaries, and they liken it to a property line. A line that says, that's Dr. Bill's plot of land, and on the other side of the line is Austin's plot of land. And if Austin wants to share some of his property with Dr. Bill, well, that's Austin's choice. And if Dr. Bill wants to share with Austin, that's his choice. But they are individuals made in the image of God with the capacity to think and clearly reason. And God calls each of them to be charitable and generous with their things. But they need to make individual choices as to who crosses the property line and who shares and who doesn't and who receives what, those kinds of things. Well, I don't think we can take the property line metaphor for granted anymore. That first book came out, what, I think in 1990. And here we are a quarter of a century later, roughly speaking. And it is just understood in our culture that some people have too much property. And I need to cross the line and take what you have because I don't have enough. That's where we're at in our culture today. And so I wanted to bring that up, the Boundaries book series, and the idea that in church we talk about our personal space and boundaries, but we don't talk about material boundaries, and those are equally as spiritual, I believe, as to the biblical underpinnings of these kinds of things. Dr. Scott Ray and I, in our book, The Virtues of Capitalism, we have an entire chapter in the book called The Bible on Economics, and it starts with some basic presuppositions. For one of them, God empowered and entrusted individual human beings right from the get-go in the story of creation. He entrusted the earth to human beings, and we are his stewards. Now, ultimately, all these things are under God's sovereignty, and he owns it all. But as I relate to you, as you relate to me, as human beings relate to one another, there are boundaries in place here. And God has allowed me stewardship over a certain number of assets and dollars in the bank and property that I own and those kinds of things. And I'm called to be a good steward of that. You're called to be a good steward of yours. God also calls us to be charitable in the scriptures. We see this as the, even as the book of the New Testament unfolds, we see this scriptural mandate on God's people, the Israelites, to be good stewards of that which is entrusted to them, but also to be charitable. There are very strong commands, both in the Old Testament and even in the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament, very strong commands for those who are wealthy to be extra special generous and to treat their employees, their workers, really, really well. But that's not a third-party government mandate. Never do we see in the scriptures any suggestion that the pathway to prosperity and to peace and to economic justice is to elect members of Congress or governors or presidents who go and confiscate more and more and more and more from people who have been materially successful and give and give and give to people who, in some cases, don't work at all. That's a corruption of a biblical idea on the economy. But we really can't trace these things back to the scriptures. It is implicit in the Old and New Testament that individuals have the right to private property, and that right needs to be respected. It is also implicit and explicit in the Old and New Testament that those of us who are financially and monetarily successful have a really, really tall calling on us to be charitable, to serve the cup of cool water in Jesus' name. But I think the church does a huge disservice, and I'll just cite an example of this personally. When I take the time to go care for the poor, when I take the time to work it into my calendar, to go volunteer serving meals to, let's be very honest, unkempt, dirty, smelly, not well-spoken people at the local homeless shelter and rescue mission, when I serve that cup of cool water in Jesus' name, God works within me. I am transformed. I come away a little more humble, a lot more grateful. There is a spiritual dynamic that takes hold when individuals and when the church body cares for the poor. When money just gets taken out of my paycheck, I never see it in the first place, and it gets spent on some government bureaucracy that redistributes funds in the form of food stamps or Medicaid and whatnot, there's no spiritual dynamic there. It's very impersonal. So there's a, I guess the bottom line is, and this is what Dr. Ray and I say in the book, The Virtues of Capitalism, government welfare and private Christian charity are absolutely not the same thing. And we need to get that through our minds, I believe.
Well, it's critical. And unfortunately, there are some Christian leaders, there are some who speak with a lot of authority who disagree strongly with you and are advocating for things that I think both of us would say are not biblical, and they are linking those two very closely, and they're not differentiating, and that's very troubling. By the way, we have three copies of Austin's book to give away. If all of this stuff is intriguing to you, you've never heard these sort of concepts before, maybe your pastor has never talked about them, we would love to give you a copy of Austin's book they wrote with Dr. Scott Ray from Biola University. It's called The Virtues of Capitalism, A Moral Case for Free Markets. And if you call us right now here at Faith Radio in the next 10 minutes or so, what we'll do is we'll put you into a drawing for a copy of one of those books, and we would love to have you add that to your library. It's 11:47. I'm Bill Meyer. This is the Faith Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break. Be back with more from Austin Hill on the Faith Radio Network.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. As I mentioned earlier this hour, if you didn't have an opportunity to join us for our fall share event a couple weeks ago, you still have a chance to make a gift to Faith Radio to keep programming on the air, the best Bible teachers in the world that you hear on this network, as well as our great live programming Monday through Friday, and a couple of live shows on Saturday. Find out more about the entire broadcast schedule, what we believe in, what we stand for at myfaithradio.com, and you can find out how you can be a part of the Faith Radio family, how you can make this programming happen, because we count on people just like you, not your brother-in-law, but you, to keep Faith Radio on the air. My guest is Austin Hill, who you hear Monday through Friday, 6 to 8, here on the Faith Radio Network. And Austin, as I mentioned, is the author, co-author of a wonderful book called The Virtues of Capitalism. Every Christian should have this book on their bookshelf. Every pastor and church leader should read this book. It's actually, I'm just going to give you a little plug here, Austin. It's very delightful reading. It's not only is, I think it tackles important, very, very important topics, topics that have been ignored for a long time by the church, but it's also fun to read. You just are a great writer, and it, you know, sometimes you wade through these books, and it's like you, I find myself, you know, you're reading that sentence over and over, and what am I really reading here? I don't really understand.
But that was your book, me in grad school, by the way.
Yeah, me too, big time. But this book is very fun to read. You could read it over a nice long weekend, and you will learn so much. You'll know, I'm going to go out on a limb here, I believe you will know more than 99% of the people in your congregation about the issue of free markets and economics and what the Bible has to say if you read Austin's book that he wrote with
Thank
Dr.
you.
Scott Ray.
That's
so,
very generous. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, you bet. Okay, new topic, but very related to what we're talking about. The new U.S. unemployment numbers came out on Friday, and there was some very disturbing news behind those figures, something called the labor participation rate in our country.
Yeah.
I know you've talked about that fairly extensively on your Saturday show, which is coming up at 1 o'clock today, but for people that aren't familiar with that, explain that statistic in terms that the average person can comprehend, and why the labor participation rate in the United States right now should be a major concern for all of us.
This should be, and thank you for bringing this up, this should be another alarm bells moment in our churches this weekend and at Christian colleges and universities and seminaries. And the alarm should have been ringing for the last 5 or 6 years or so. But here's a thumbnail sketch of what we're talking about here, what Dr. Bill is referring to. If I'm employed, well, that's pretty straightforward that I belong in the employed category when we're counting workers across the country. If I'm unemployed, you'd think that I'd be categorized as unemployed, right? It's not that straightforward. That's common. Yeah, that just makes common sense to you and to me, Dr. Bill, and I'm sure to most of your listeners. For accounting purposes, government accounting purposes, if you are employed either full-time or part-time, or if you are unemployed but searching for a job, well, you are counted in the governments as being in the labor force. If you are neither working part-time nor full-time, and you just gave up and you're not even trying to find a job, well, you're just not counted at all. You are, quote-unquote, out of the labor force. Now, it would be easier if you could see a flow chart here, but in the category of in the labor force, there are two subcategories there. There's employed and unemployed. But you can be unemployed and be in the labor force, according to the government. If you're out of the labor force, you gave up. You're not even trying. You're not doing anything productive. You just simply don't get counted. And we've been on this trajectory, really, I want to say, since the market crash and the beginning of the so-called Great Recession back in late 08, we've been on this trajectory where the percentage of the American population that's just out of the labor force, totally checked out, is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the experts, and this is a point that I try to drive home on both of my regular talk programs. The church in America has to stop allowing its perspective on the world to be defined by the dominant news media and by our governments. You'll read these monthly jobs reports that, that's a compilation of data from the Department of Labor and the Department of, or the U.S. Bureau of Statistics and such, and then CNBC or Fox Business or New York Times or whatever, they report it, and they'll say things like, the average unemployment rate dipped a tenth of a percentage point. It's only at 5.4% now. That's a good figure. And 190,000 new jobs created last month, so we're in recovery mode. They're ignoring this labor force participation figure when they report those headlines. And I was out of the country, actually, yesterday when the latest data for the month of September was published. So I don't have it right here at my fingertips. But I know back in June, for example, of this month, and it's gotten worse since June, but earlier this summer, we had pretty close to one-third of the American population out of the labor force, not even working. Now, some of those folks are retirees. We don't necessarily expect them to be working. Some of those people are underage minors, and we don't expect them to be working and providing for themselves either. But a ballooning portion of that out of the labor force portion of our culture are people who are otherwise of working age and able-bodied, and they're just not doing anything. And we need to start asking why, and do so compassionately but forthrightly as well. We know that there aren't enough jobs being created in our economy. We have made public policy choices with the way we have voted and the way we haven't voted in some cases that have lent themselves to inadequate job creation. We should have expected this. There really are no great surprises with some of the policies that our president and our Congress and state governments have imposed upon us. But we also need to be asking, are there people in our church for whom it is just more comfortable, perhaps easier to sign up for food stamps or Medicaid or other government benefits and simply not work? And in some cases, I think that's probably the case. And I can't tell you the last time I heard a sermon in the church that I go to now or any church about the moral virtues, the moral imperative of working and being productive and supporting our families. But that is absolutely scriptural. That is New Testament. That is the teachings of Jesus. That is the teachings of the Apostle Paul. We need to get back to a biblical understanding of the moral imperative to work, because I don't know how far this trend goes. As I said, we're right at about one-third of the population no longer working. I don't know where the scale tips, and there's just no returning for America. But the current circumstances in terms of labor and productivity are unsustainable. I'll certainly say that.
Well, it's frightening to, if you walk down that road, Austin, and I know you've talked about this on Austin's Big World of Small Business, what happens as that number increases? So when you hear 5% unemployment, that doesn't mean 95% of the people in America are working. And no. As that number, that labor participation rate shrinks, and fewer people are contributing to our economy, we have major problems ahead for us. Because as my son Joseph, my brilliant 12-year-old son, said, the government doesn't make money. You make money, Dad, and the government takes it. So, mm-hmm. Anyway, Dawson, we appreciate so much your time today. I want to commend this book again to our listeners. The Virtues of Capitalism, A Moral Case for Free Markets. Austin co-authored that book with his friend, Dr. Scott Ray, who is a brilliant ethicist and business professor at Biola University in Southern California. Thanks for your time today, my friend. I'll encourage our listeners to stick around for your program later this afternoon here on the Faith Radio Network. And meanwhile, have a great weekend.
And you as well, Dr. Bill. Thanks so much.
Austin Hill, who you can catch later this afternoon and Monday morning, 6 to 8 here on the Faith Radio Network. Thank you so much for joining us today. I pray that you and your family have a wonderful weekend. Tomorrow morning, when you go to church and you're worshiping, remember those people in Oregon who are suffering today in that small town of Roseburg. I'll see you next Saturday, 11 a.m. here on the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.